Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
So, Brandon, it seems Jey Uso made a choice. But with Jey, you never really know. He fist bumped Damian Priest because before he attacks anyone, he always pretends to be their friend. And then super kicked him off the ring apron near the end of the match against Drew McIntyre. But that sidebar led to giving Drew an opening to the Claymore to win. Then Cody came up and made the save when Judgment Day attacked Jey 3-on-1. And Drew McIntyre just kind of walked up the ramp, looked back, maybe seemed torn, maybe performatively was trying to seem torn, but wasn't. But nevertheless, Cody charged out and raced to the ring and made the save. What do you think about this chapter in everybody involved in this? The Judgment Day making the pitch to Jey seeming to reject them. You got Sammy and KO, with KO saying, "I don't trust Jey, and you might as well be in the Judgment Day. It doesn't matter." Sammy going, "Let's give this guy a chance." KO, "You and I haven't trusted each other before, but now we do." You got Drew in the midst of a heel turn. You got Cody being Mr. Loyal before maybe he gets sent to SmackDown. Who knows? They don't really talk about that anymore. A lot of moving pieces here. I think it's fun, and I think it's been well done. How about you?
Yeah, I think they've done a good job with it. And I gauge that. My barometer for that is kind of the fact that very rarely these days do I sit down and watch a 3-hour Raw live as it airs, unless I am doing this post show with you. So it's kind of a shock to the system when I do that, because the 3 hours is kind of like, oh man, you forget how long the show is when you're not able to just fast forward through commercials and fast forward through segments you might not want to see. But I enjoyed the fact that there was this thread that ran through the entirety of the show tonight and that has run through Raw for weeks. I mean, even not watching the shows live, I can pick up on that. So I appreciate what they've done to weave this story in and out of multi-segments on Raw. And there are so many moving parts, like you said, and so many different characters involved that it never feels like it's taking up too much time, because you're getting bits and pieces from a variety of different characters. So I thought that they've done a good job week to week, and I thought they did a particularly good job tonight with the closing segment most of all. I liked the fact that we got a straight answer from Jey, and you know, there is sort of the built-in eye roll of he has to tease that he's going to side with the Judgment Day before he inevitably turns on them. But I like the fact that they didn't drag it out more than that. It was, you know, the fist bump and then the super kick, not a fist bump this week and, oh, he's in the Judgment Day, and then next week or 2 weeks from now, he delivers those super kicks. Or
Jey almost super kicks Priest, but Drew hits him with a claymore before we can know for sure.
Yeah.
Jey was going to super kick. You know, it could be some in-between thing. They would be tempted, yeah.
Yeah, and we're getting that on SmackDown with Jimmy Uso. And we have been getting it for a while, week to week. They just keep going back and forth. So I'm glad that they just committed to one idea and stuck with it here. And I like the subtleties for Drew McIntyre too. I mean, not so subtle tonight, but it's been you know, coming for a while that he's likely going to turn heel. And I think that they've done a good job building to it and making it not feel just out of nowhere. And then, as far as Cody Rhodes goes, I mean, Wade, when in WWE's long history do you recall a babyface being protected to this degree in such a smart and successful way? And, you know, they protected John Cena, of course, at all costs, but he got booed regardless. On a near constant basis. Cody Rhodes is put in the most advantageous position on a week-to-week basis to all but guarantee a positive reaction from the crowd, and it works.
Well, they learned from what happened with Cody and AEW. I mean, you've got to manage those things.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, even if they're not managing it, Cody's been very popular. But, you know, there's little cracks here and there. You know, I mean, people in AEW love Cody until they didn't. The fans did. Now, we don't have a gender reveal party and all the nonsense of
sure.
a variety of the Codyverse stuff. And, you know, Cody's better, more tightly scripted. I don't know if tightly scripted is the right word. But, you know, he has an editor and experienced feedback, kind of making sure he doesn't stray off in a self-indulgent, meandering sidebar. Which was something he did in AEW that I think also kind of caused some eye rolls where people lose, think, oh, this guy sure enjoys the sound of his own voice. I think that was part of what went wrong with Cody. There were times it was sort of endearing and fun and casual, but, you know, I mean, it did seem to backfire. WWE's just doing a really good job sending off weaknesses in Cody. So, you know, what do you want to talk about? That is still at risk, but... And Cody, I don't think, is always super self-aware of how he comes across mm-hmm. in every way, but I think he has smart people around him. You know, none of us are super self-aware of how we all come across. Try doing it on national television under the scrutiny of you know, the pressure of the bright lights and the TV cameras. But nevertheless, that is a thing where you want people going, hey, who Cody respects, going, hey, Cody, let's not do that anymore. Let's steer things this way. And it does seem to be happening. So he continues to be a big success story. I'm not saying the clock is ticking until he inevitably is booed. And in part, it's because what you said, the situations they put him in to charge past Drew and save Jay. And, you know, it's a 3-on-1 against him, but he doesn't care. He's just a straightforward, unabashed, no, like, hesitation defender of that of people who fans like and want defended.
He's always around, surrounded by, and in ingratiating himself to the hot act on the show too, and getting sort of like sharing the rub with them, and they are acting in a way toward him that ensures that the crowd isn't going to see him as stealing their thunder, but rather working right alongside them.
Yes. Now, we haven't heard for a while, and maybe you picked up on something I missed. Did they mention the equal trade to SmackDown?
I don't think so, no.
I don't think so either, and it's just weird. You know, Jason Paul noted that in his report. It's like, we seem to care more than anyone in WWE. It's strange, but, you know, I assume they're still going to do it, and they're just waiting for the right time to kind of, you know, go back to it. I don't know what they're waiting for, you know, from a storyline standpoint.
Right.
Because we're all real. I mean, why does Raw get Jay, but SmackDown doesn't get anyone else yet? What would be the case? Although, who are the people who would be looking out for SmackDown instead of Raw? It's not like they have separate GMs or anything. So that whole thing is weird. I don't, you know, we'll see. Do you have a guess on or a hunch on what's going on with that?
I mean, as far as why they're not mentioning it, no, I certainly don't. But as far as who it was going to be, I mean, I would think that Cody makes a lot of sense, given that you would think that they're lining up another Roman Reigns match. Although I guess, you know, all the Rock stuff this week kind of makes you wonder about that. But I'm not sure. We were getting mentions of it pretty consistently, at least once a show there, since they executed the trade. And then it's just kind of fallen off. But I don't anticipate that they'll just forget about it. It almost seems like one of those things where in a few weeks it'll happen and they'll be like, oh, surprise, like, bet you forgot about this.
Yeah, I'm in the camp of thinking – I think the odds of Rock against Reigns at WrestleMania next year is, for me, I would estimate the percentage chance lower than it seems most are. Based on some stuff. But I'm not enough to declare like, oh, I'm super confident that's not happening. And part of what makes me think maybe it will happen is because they dropped this big thing that we've all been talking about for weeks. Like, well, maybe they were going to send Cody to SmackDown, but then Nick Khan, who's tight with Rock, and then he's like, well, we really want to do this match, and it would be so much bigger. We did all, you know, 3 billion social media views on Friday. How can we, you know, Cody's never done that at WrestleMania, be bigger than ever. Let's do it. When are we ever going to have a strike, you know, again, where Rock's got time and willingness? Let's work it out, even if they had creative differences last year over what to do. I mean, yeah, then you could imagine them going, oh, God, we better figure out who to send over to SmackDown if it's not the original plan, if it was Cody. And they're just going like, oh, God, we got to come up with something because we said it, or do we pretend that we never said it? But you do kind of expect Adam Pearce when he's like, oh, I'm so stressed out tonight talking to you know, whoever on the phone. I've got this going on and this going on, and I still have to figure out who to send from Raw to SmackDown. Mm-hmm. They could just throw that in, and they haven't. So it would make sense that, oh, we've decided to change course and we're going to do Rock Reigns, and therefore we have to delay this reveal. But I don't know. I still think the Reigns camp, and Rock kind of admitted, I don't think you have to read between the lines. He just said it, you know, we couldn't come, whatever his words were, basically we couldn't come to an agreement on how it should go. I think there's the Reigns camp wants things to be a certain way, and Rock is Rock, and he wants things a certain way, and we all think, oh, they all get along because they're all family. But I think, you know, Rock in a not a passive-aggressive way, just sort of in a forthcoming way said, you know, Vince said, yeah, let's do it, and then Vince suddenly wasn't there, and they couldn't work out the details. I don't know what's changed other than ownership. I don't know, and maybe they don't know either. Maybe that's still something they're playing around with and trying to figure out, and maybe that's just part of the delay here is they're like, well, we got to figure out if we're doing this or not. So
the really curious thing becomes if you do have that match, what do you do with Cody?
People have thrown different ideas out there.
The idea of a Seth Rollins title match just seems like such a cop-out.
Would it be satisfactory for Cody and his fans if he was the one to end Gunther's reign at WrestleMania? I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I've heard some ideas where it's like, oh, maybe that worked. But yeah, I mean, Seth just feels like a cop out. So I don't know. I mean, people have ideas. Send them our way. Wade Keller podcast at pwtorch.com. Yeah, Brandon.
Logan Paul.
Oh God. Yes. My thing
is like, do you put him in any sort of title match? I think it has to be just some sort of heated personal main event level rivalry rather than especially Rollins title. I just think that would be seen as just such a consolation prize. I think it hurts Cody. I think it hurts Seth. I think it hurts the title.
Let's on that note, pause and introduce ourselves, introduce the show, and then we'll move on to other topics. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show following the Monday, September 18th, 2023 episode of Raw. I'm Wade Keller, host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and the website pwtorch.com, and the host of this, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, which live streams after Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and Collision every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday. Thanks for joining us today. The other voice here on the show is Brandon LeClaire. He is a PW Torch contributor. He covers pay-per-views and PLEs. He formerly covered SmackDown. Brandon, welcome. Good to have you back in the co-host chair.
Yeah, glad to be here. I also can say, Wade, I don't even know. I'm not sure if you're aware of this. I guess I can make an informal, formal announcement. But I will, for the foreseeable future, be joining Greg Parks on all Wrestling Night in America's following the pay-per-views and PLEs. He has asked me to join him with live callers after the PLEs and pay-per-views, so I will be doing that for the foreseeable future.
He did tell me that, and then I told him, hit pause. I just don't know if we want that much Brandon. And apparently he didn't tell you that. Now I have to edit this out.
Oh, no, that's great.
That's great news. You've been very good on the VIP roundtables when you've pinch hit and joined us on those. And so it'll be great to know we'll get your voice all the time with Greg.
Yeah, I certainly enjoy doing those. I did the last couple in a pinch and had a lot of fun with them and figured that it's pretty easy since I've just spent the last several hours covering it. I'm certainly up to date, up to the minute on everything happening. So works out well.
So people can hear that show live. There'll be a link at the top and bottom of my pay-per-view and PLE reports with a link to the live stream for Wrestling Night in America following pay-per-views with Greg Parks and Brandon LeClaire. So that is very cool. Speaking of participation, you can call us right now if you'd like. The number to call to participate in tonight's conversation is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. Understandably, we don't get as many calls up against Monday Night Football, especially when the season is fresh. So if you are a wallflower, usually consider yourself invited to be a first-time caller or return if it's been a while. You can also email us if that's easier, especially if you watch Raw, but then you turn on a football game afterwards and don't live stream us. You can still participate via email. After all, our shows, Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. Okay, we can go back to the main event conversation, and there's certainly, I think, more things we can talk about. But I mentioned Gunther as a possible opponent for Cody, just kind of spitballing. So we had Chad Gable say he wants a rematch, and Pierce like, you lost. Kind of got to earn your way back. Logical. Makes sense. Good to have leadership that seems to, you know, have a good handle on who deserves and doesn't deserve title shots. And then Bronson Reed stepped in and said, yeah, get to the back of the line. Bronson Reed beat Chad Gable. And I thought Wade Barrett made an interesting comment, probably not winging it, saying it's time for Reed to start making some real waves in WWE. This man is money. And then he beats Chad Gable in 9 minutes. Seems like, to me, that does move Gable out of, you know, IC title rematch contention. I mean, it certainly should. What do you think of that? Because Gable last week said, you know, he promised his daughter, his family or something, he guaranteed, whatever it was, that he was going to beat Gunther. And, you know, I think that raised some eyebrows. Like, well, usually wrestlers don't say that if they aren't going to get a rematch. This does seem to kind of say, well, it's not going to come anytime soon.
Yeah, and Gunther went hard at the fact that he made Gable's daughter cry too. So I figured that it was sort of a shoe in there that they were going back to the match just because they were so heavy handed in having him talk about that. So yeah, this was a curious move to me. I not that I'm upset that they look to be moving Bronson Reed into some sort of position, but I hope that this means that is actually the case and it's not just a one-off win for Bronson like we've seen multiple times before since his rehire. That's my concern. If you're going to waste some of the equity that you've built around Chad Gable lately, then I hope it is for something meaningful. So I hope we're getting something out of Reed now. As for Gable, it is interesting because I think that they've kind of caught lightning in a bottle with him to some extent, and it's hard to see where he slots in only because. I mean, he doesn't seem like a guy who's going to challenge for Rollins' world title, and you know, babyface versus babyface matchup isn't going to really work anyway. So outside of challenging Gunther, his ceiling then becomes a tag team title opportunity with Otis, which I think is fine. I mean, I presume that Judgment Day will retain against Sami and KO next week, and that will free them up for maybe a feud with Otis and Gable now that they're or at least Gable is taken a little bit more seriously. But it is interesting because they've built a lot of momentum behind Gable, and it seems like they're going to just go in another direction.
What's the pitch you make to push Gable in more of a, you know, Bryan Danielson? I'm trying to think of like maybe you come up with other comparisons, you know, somebody who doesn't fit the normal. I mean, with Danielson, it's not even a great example because he just kind of came in and it just like organically happened and he hadn't just been marginalized as a comedy figure for a long time. TNA tried to do it with Eric Young. That's another example that comes to mind where he was, you know, in Team Canada and then he was sort of like did comedy and he was really talented at the comedy. And then they decided we're going to make him our Daniel Bryan and he's going to be a serious world champion centerpiece babyface. And it was hard to shed from your image of Eric Young what the comedy and the stuff he had been doing. And I think actually Eric Young's probably the closest parallel to what we're seeing with Chad Gable, which is we like the comedy. And we like him, and, you know, he's even better than Eric Young in the ring. But you look at him, and there's still something about him that just – it's hard to take him super seriously. So that works against him. But working for him is how damn good he is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think his promos, even minus leaning hard on Shush and that kind of thing, have been solid enough not to disqualify him, but not good enough to just be a shoe-in to go, yeah, make this guy a top five babyface singles wrestler and, you know, do something different with Otis. So kind of where are you on that, of the pros and cons of what they've done with Gable and what they still can do?
Yeah, I've been impressed with the way that they got the crowd so you know, uniformly behind him against Gunther, and the way that they've transitioned he and Otis and Maxine into a babyface role. I think that the crowd really has latched on to that pairing in a really good way. Gable, I'm with you. He's not bad. He's not bad on the microphone. He's not, you know, actively hurting or bringing down segments where he's cutting promos, but he also is not, it's not that he's not believable, but I think that the over-reliance on the shush stuff, like tonight with Bronson Reed, it felt really out of place. It felt like it didn't need to be there. He was putting on a serious front. He was, you know, essentially saying that he has to get another shot at Gunther. And then Reed comes into the picture, and the first thing out of his mouth is shush. And I think it's time to move on from that. I really think the crowd has gotten to a point where they've graduated beyond just liking Gable for his comedy and liking him because he's, like you brought up, an incredible wrestler and a believable character and a likable guy. So I think the key is toning down the comedy even more, getting him into that more serious role, the way that they did with Bryan Danielson, you know, coming off of the stuff with Kane that was virtually all comedy. I think that is important. And then seeing how consistently and how big the groundswell of support from the crowd is. I don't think that it's going to reach Bryan Danielson or Daniel Bryan type levels, but I think that you go with the crowd, you go with what the crowd wants here and see how much they're going to get behind him and how much they demand that he's in a prominent role on TV.
So let's shift to Bronson Reed and what has worked and hasn't worked. Wade Barrett's comment, it's time for him to start making waves. Like you said, I mean, there's just sort of, if you start and stop, push somebody and you seem like they're being pushed and there's vignettes and then it gets dropped. You end up dulling the sharpness of any future elevations because fans just feel like, okay, we've been here before. But, you know, I still believe personally in Reed being someone who's worth investing in. You're just sort of waiting for them to decide, yeah, we're consistently ready to start doing that. What do you think Reed's strengths and weaknesses are? What are the pros and cons of really getting behind him at this point? And did you see tonight as a sign or a start of that or not?
I thought tonight was mostly more of the same as far as his performance goes, and I'm not that's not a negative. I think his in-ring stuff has been largely very good since his return. A lot of the offense just looks really great. I mean, he's certainly a credible athlete. I think that the modification of the splash that he does from the top rope, the way that he doesn't perch there, he just sort of arrives there and then immediately launches himself, makes it look really impactful. It helps it stand out from a lot of the other guys that are doing splashes, even though he is much larger than them. I like the offense. I like the skill set. I think that the character is lacking something and that it's just not clearly defined. I mean, like he's going by Big Bronson Reed now, and it's like, yeah, we get it. You're a big dude, but that doesn't really mean anything. The promos have been, you know, fine. They're there, but he hasn't had a standout opportunity yet on the microphone to really make any sort of statement. I think the biggest thing with him is, you know, like we both mentioned, it's going to be consistency. I think that there needs to be a consistent effort to put him on TV every week or most weeks and give him either dominant squash wins or competitive matches with like he had with Gable tonight, and get the fans' eyes on him for extended periods of time, because there just hasn't been that consistency with his presentation. So people can't really get behind any semblance of a push because it's just been so inconsistent and so start-stop. So yeah, I think consistency is going to be the key with him. I don't know what his ceiling is, but I certainly think that he's worth investing more than they have to date.
Yeah, or just subtract the weeks they don't push him, and string, you know, compress what we've seen where there mm-hmm. is a push, there are vignettes, mm-hmm. there are wins. And he got, you know, a little bit sidetracked with kind of a three-way thing going on and all that. Speaking of which, okay, so Tommaso Ciampa throws his – oh, go ahead, yeah.
One more thing. Bronson Reed is if anyone out there is a movie buff, Bronson Reed is a great follow on Letterboxd. He's a really, really big movie guy, and he's got a very wide array. Like, we're talking everything from the typical blockbuster to horror to classic to weird art house films. He loves it all, so he's a lot of fun.
Well, if Vince McMahon knew that, he'd make him the new Roger Ebert. That'd be his gimmick. He'd be reviewing movies, but they'd be like movies of I don't even know.
Don't do it.
Well, yeah. All right. Well,
now it's out there. You got to edit it out. You got to edit it out now.
All right. So Tommaso Ciampa says he was, you know, I'm so tired of people saying the word catering. I think there should be – nobody should be allowed to say catering, like, for like, 3 years. It's just so whatever, like stale meta. But he didn't say that. He just said he's been, you know, he has been too patient, and he's done being patient. He wants to call his shots, and he wants to beat Gunther. He beat Giovanni Vinci, and then in about 3 minutes, Gunther was not pleased, nor by the way, was Ludwig Kaiser, who was dressing down and scorned Vinci afterwards. So maybe Ciampa beats Kaiser next, and then does, you know, build up a record to earn a match against Gunther. I mean, Ciampa's not going to be the guy to end Gunther's reign, I feel quite confident saying, but do you like him as an intermediate fall challenger relative to other options that they have? Obviously, there's better options, but WWE doesn't always go with their best. A lot of fans don't understand this. WWE doesn't – they know, they agree with you who the best option is. They're just saving it for a bigger show or a different time or when they know there's going to be a lull in something else and they need to then save it for then. And I mean, it's fine that fans express themselves, but, you know, don't think because they're not doing it, they don't agree with you. They're just privy to the pace of how they want to do things. Ciampa feels like a bridge feud who would be a good match for Gunther, but – not many people are going to look at him as the guy who would end it. And that's the challenge in doing it. But I still don't have a problem. And I like Ciampa earning his way and getting a shot because it should be a good match. And it's another, you know, it gives Gunther a chance to have another clean win against somebody credible.
Yeah, I like it. I've always been a big advocate for Tommaso Ciampa. I like the match. I like the idea of the two of them on paper. Sounds really good. Sounds really fun. Sounds hard hitting. And that's what I like from these Gunther title defenses. So I am all for a Gunther Ciampa match, whether it be a big, you know, sort of marquee match for Raw or on one of the upcoming pay-per-views. I think it's a good bridge, a good fall feud, like you mentioned, during a bit of a lull. I'm for it all the way around, and I'm glad that it isn't just a setup where Ciampa just, you know, essentially wins a quick number one contenders match and suddenly he is the next guy for Gunther. I like the fact that he is instead working his way through the other members of Imperium and putting it out there that he wants a title shot to sort of earn his way onto Gunther's radar, which is how they've set up a lot of these challengers. And I think it's refreshing and it's worked well. And I hope they continue doing it. Ultimately, I guess at this stage, you know, seeing now, having a large enough sample size for Tommaso Ciampa on the main roster and for Johnny Gargano, if Gargano is going to make a return, which I presume that is the case at some point, I think I would like to just see a DIY reunion. I think at this point it's probably best for the outlook of both of their main roster career, and especially with the revitalization of the tag team division, I think they could be a really strong babyface group there if they're handled well. So that is the end goal for me, is what I hope we see.
Yeah, I got a kick out of Cole in the Bronson Reed Chad Gable match saying after Barrett says, "This man is money," and Cole goes, "Well, if you want championship opportunities, you need to win matches." And then we fast forward just couple segments to Becky Lynch going, I'll give anyone a back a title shot. Because they went from basically mocking AEW, which is Battle Royal Tournament. I guess tournaments you win matches, but you don't have to win matches to get in the tournament, which is, you know, it's just the like, it's just ridiculous who gets in these tournaments for title shots in AEW. And then everyone's got open challenges, or they win Battle Royals. So I'm like, WWE's sort of, you know, it's passive-aggressive dig at AEW.
You don't even have to work there.
What's that?
You don't even have to work there to get a title shot.
Yes, that's right. Yes, add that to the mix. There's, you know, other qualifications, just be the hardcore fan favorite from outside of AEW. So then I got a kick out of Becky issuing the open challenge. But anyway. So I think I was going to say something else about what you said, but it wasn't that big of a deal. Let's now go to Derek in Utah. Derek, welcome. Thanks for calling. Did you attend tonight's Raw?
I did indeed. I did.
Yeah, so how was it?
Oh, it was fun. You know, I haven't been to a TV event since right before the pandemic. So literally the last TV event I went to was the AEW Dynamite the night Rudy Gobert from the Jazz announced he had COVID and the world shut down in 2 days. So,
oh, wow.
yeah. So it was kind of
Gobert,
with my,
what a personality.
I know. It was kind of funny. Me and my best friend, we've been wrestling fans since we were four. We were both at that event as well, and we kind of just laughed at, like, oh, the world before that night and then the world after that night were two different times and places, that's for sure.
Yes, well, on a personal level, how did it feel? Like, you're a wrestling fan. It's, you know, been years. Was it kind of cool to be back in that energy?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it being a WWE fan over the last probably year plus has been better. I mean, you don't have the hostility from a section of the fan base where they're waiting for a chance to, you know, adversely affect the show. That's not there anymore. And it's more of a fun vibe with lots of families. I saw a lot of little kids who were diehard wrestling fans trying to do the Jey Uso thing, and they're really excited, and it's hard not to feel good or have a good time vibe when you're filled with young wrestling fans that you kind of see as, you know, yourself 20 years ago, you know, so that's fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's talk about some things that happened and some of the crowd reactions. I want to start with Cody and Dominic, two of the most intense crowd reactions WWE has going right now. Cody, wildly popular, and Dominic, wildly unpopular. What did you think of being in the arena for those two reactions? Was Cody stronger or less than you expected? Same with the booing with Dominic.
Cody's pretty much what I expected. I will say with the big stage and the pyro and being the first guy out, he comes across as just a huge star, not just a wrestler, but like a superstar in that scenario. I mean, his mannerisms, the way he hits his poses, some of it feels contrived at times, but, you know, it feels like a big-time star. He's got that star presence that, you know, no matter what you say about pro wrestlers, if they're good when the bell rings or whatnot, very few guys have that presentation and that allure, and at least in my perspective, he has it. I mean, he's got that star presence. And then as for Dominic, I know I think a lot of people want to assume that the booing is piped in, because how could it be so loud for somebody? But if they're piping it in, they fooled me, because the people around me, and they were waiting. I think you've brought it up multiple times. And you're right on the money. People buy tickets to boo him because it's fun, you know, and he definitely has that going for him. And not a lot of wrestlers who get quote-unquote heat can truly say that. He's selling tickets because people want to boo him. And that's mm-hmm. that's exceptional. That's not the rule. That's something special. So it was what I expected.
Was there even a was there even a hint of anyone cheering Dom or booing Cody?
I did not sense it whatsoever, but Salt Lake has never been, even in the height of it's fun to boo Roman Reigns. You don't get a lot of adverse chance to what WWE wants you to react. So I did not get a hint that anybody was sitting on their hands waiting for Cody to slip up so they could boo him, and nor did I feel that anybody was aching to cheer Dominic to you know, stand out in an adverse way.
Brandon, let me throw to you for a question for Derek.
What was the reaction like in the building to Natalia being the one to answer Becky's challenge? I know there was probably some speculation as to who it could be. It seemed like Natalia kind of got spoiled online a couple hours before, but just wondering if people had you know, hopes or aspirations of it being something bigger.
I did not feel that way, and me and my buddy I was sitting next to, we were kind of going through the mental Rolodex of, well, who could it be? We've already seen this person. Who's left? And the only name I could come up with was Raquel. It was really the only woman wrestler of any notoriety who wasn't on the show, and I didn't think that made sense. And so I don't think anybody was waiting for somebody else. So because they're not waiting for somebody else, and I don't think they selected somebody in there mentally, I don't think they felt let down that it was Natalia.
I thought Natalia's promo was good.
Yeah. And I agree with you. You know, I hear a lot of people talk about what makes a good promo or what makes a not-so-good promo, but to me, I just kind of break it down to I want to believe in what they're saying, and I don't care about the verbiage or clever phrases or, you know, MJF's got, you know, some zingers here and there, but if I don't believe what you're saying, then your promo's not effective to me. And when Natalia came out today, I believe what she was saying. She said it with passion, and yep. There's enough legitimacy in her claim that it's believable and blandish. And so, yeah, I thought she did a good job.
She hadn't been on Raw since the title match with Rhea Ripley, and you know, you can imagine her here in open challenge. You know, you want to imagine things are real. You want the company to tell the story in a way where you're not reminded, oh, yeah, this is a, you know, it's a show and it's scripted and all that. You can conjure up in your head Natalia hearing Becky say open challenge and Natalia just getting up immediately and going, I don't care about someone being younger or someone who's never had a shot before. I want my chance. I've earned it. Yeah.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And you know, I think, like, as you're saying, Wade, we kind of expect some heels to be outlandish, but I think at the core of everything, we want there at least to be a grain of truth to that person in what they're saying. And for Natalia and her presentation and promo and her history, I think she has more than a grain of truth to what she was saying. And the fact that she said it with conviction, I think that makes it effective.
Absolutely. Go ahead, Brendan. Throw another question.
I was going to ask how was attendance. I know that it looked like most of the building had sold. It was one of the smaller setups I think we've seen for a WWE TV taping in a while. But the numbers looked good going in. Was there any empty areas or anything anything you noticed that stood out? It looked good on TV.
So the upper section, which I was in the upper section because I like the cheap seats. You know, that's where you get a real feel of the venue. But the upper level of the Delta Center, and I'm glad that it's back to the Delta Center, which is where the Utah Jazz play, I think it holds about 12,000 people for basketball. I think that's about right. And the upper section was tarped off about 30%. Maybe 40% of the upper section. So if I could, I'll throw out a number that might be right or wrong or off by 1,000 or whatever. But I think if I said there was 6,000 to 7,000 people in the arena, and no more than eight, I think that would be probably pretty accurate.
I think you're real close. I just looked up what WrestleTix reported this morning, 8,356 tickets distributed, but there's always no shows. So, you know, probably, and, I mean, there's going to be some walk up, but probably, you know, the final number will be, you know, between 7,500 and 8,800. Unless there was a big walk up, it doesn't sound like there necessarily was. So, and yeah, I mean, that's going to make for a good visual on TV. I want to ask you, Derek, about the surprise of the night, and you didn't get to hear this aspect of it, but Michael Cole really put it over, the Ivar Kofi Kingston match. They got 13 minutes. There's a lot of matches where you're like, why didn't they give them more time? Or I'm surprised they gave them that much time. This falls in the I'm surprised they gave them this much time category, but they delivered. I thought Cole was a little, you know, heavy with the phrase, but that's his job. I mean, as long as it's a really good match, if you tout it, you're doing your job by underlining and amplifying that, hey, this exceeded our expectations. Cole called it a breakout night for Ivar, even though he lost. Was the crowd into it, or did the wrestlers earn the crowd getting into it, or were they with it all the time, or do you think actually you're surprised to hear it was praised on TV because it didn't get over in the building?
I think your phrase, they earned it, is definitely justified. But I will say this about the WWE style, that I look, when you watch it live, and I don't want to put myself over, but I wrestled for quite a few years, and I remember the veterans would always say, "Don't be afraid of the silence. You should allow them to come down, and don't be afraid of allowing them to come down to build them back up." And the one difference I see with WWE style is you have a whole bunch of wrestlers who have enough confidence in what they're doing that they are not afraid to slow it down, grab a hold, let the fans come down with you, because they have the confidence that when they're building back up to a comeback or a climatic part of the match or a false finish, that they can hook them back in. And I definitely saw that was the case with the main event, and probably most notably was this match, where they allowed the heat to set in. Ivar played for the heat. They knew when to turn it up. They weren't afraid of letting the crowd come down, because they had the confidence in what they were doing to build them back up and deliver significant climatic moments at the end of the match that stand out. And that's, you know, that's creating the moments that make a match better than if you do a sentence-by-sentence recap of it, that it comes across. And I definitely think that was the case in this match.
What was I just going to bring up? Oh, Chad Gable. Brandon and I were talking about him earlier. I'm curious what the crowd reaction was for him compared to, say, Tommaso Ciampa or Ricochet. Like, where did Gable fall? Because he's been having really good matches. He's been getting pushed in mic time. He's being pushed above a level he had been, and more seriously. How did that translate with the crowd tonight, again, compared to, say, Ciampa and Ricochet?
I thought he got a better reaction than Ricochet. I think Ricochet's match with Nakamura was the only time that a heel got really any chance, because there was dueling chance for Nakamura and Ricochet. And Nakamura, I think, took the lion's share of the positive chance. And that was obviously not the case with Chad Gable in his match against Bronson Reed. And also, I think it was hopeful that during their backstage segment, when they announced that Chad Gable announced that he was going to have a match with Bronson, the crowd popped. Like, they were excited to see that match. They were excited when he came out. So it's not overwhelming, it's not earth-shaking, but I do feel that there is some groundswell for Chad Gable, some positive momentum in the right direction as a potential underdog babyface who has some growth room towards being more legitimate and a legitimate title contender for a mid-card title.
Elaborate a little more on the Nakamura reaction. Is he... Because, you know, he's got this rock star charisma, and there was, you know, obviously a lot of excitement for him going to NXT and then to the main roster. It's been up and down. but he has this something that not many people have, and he's getting to do that. He's getting to show that now. And when he's talking and with captions underneath, instead of speaking in broken English, there's more confidence. He's not struggling as much visually. And then just coming to the ring, I was watching going, man, he's got that fact, that X factor back. Cole, you know, there's a phrase they're using for Nakamura. I can't remember, something about, you know, being rejuvenated or something like that. But, you know, they've got their phrase they're going to with him. Did it feel like you were watching a big star?
I don't know. I think with all your callers, whether we care to admit it or not, we're always going to be jaded by our personal preferences.
Of course, yeah.
I've always thought Nakamura has been overrated. I don't think he's – I think he's one of many wrestlers who, because they come from Japan, they get exceptional treatment. People overlook some of their flaws. For me, when I watch Nakamura wrestle, I think he's got a lot of flaws when he's in the ring. I don't think he has a mean streak at all, and that's always going to limit your ability to be a heel if you don't turn on the nasty. And to me, he doesn't turn on the nasty, and he's got that great ring song, and he's got the mm-hmm. charismatic entrance. But when the bell rings, I don't see him as threatening as people want him to be. If that's always been my perception with him. And I watched him in New Japan, and I was hopeful when he came to WWE, but there is something that I don't think transfers with the style for him, and especially as a heel. And when he's a babyface, he has some of that charisma, but I don't think he has great babyface fire either, to be completely honest. So that's my personal preference, but that definitely jakes the way I perceived it in a live arena setting.
How about the return of Nia Jax interfering in the match, getting a no contest? Was the crowd into the tag match up until that point, and was there a groan, a sigh, outrage? What kind of reaction did Nia Jax get?
She got a groan and a sigh, and then some awes too. Like, I do think that there's something impressive about her, her size, and then, you know, she hit the big Samoan drop, and she hit her moves, and every time she hit those the big moves on the four competitors in the match, it got that gasp that you want when someone does a run in. I don't know if I thought the match was pretty much just to meet Nia Jax over. The fans reacted positively to most of the action. It was short. But once again, full disclosure, I have a personal relationship with Zoe Stark, as I know her T. I trained her for her first 3 years wrestling. So everything she does, I'll see through rose-tinted glasses, probably.
Yeah.
I watch her, and just I'm always going to think she's the best, because in my book, that's what she
is.
Yeah.
Cool. Brandon, do you want to jump in with anything else specific?
I was going to bring up the Nia Jax thing. I was really curious as to what the perspective was being there in person, because it did. I heard the same stuff on TV. It was sort of the heat you don't want, the groans and the sort of like disappointed reaction, which I couldn't quite put my finger on whether it was them reacting to Jax or them reacting to another non-finish. And so I was kind of giving the benefit of the doubt there, but then I also picked up on the oohs and ahs on for the big moves. As far as the women go in that match, I like the pairing of Shayna and Starks. I hope it's something that they explore more, because I mean, you know, we desperately need legitimate tag teams in that division.
Derek, talk about the biggest babyface reactions of the night, because there are a lot of contenders. You got, you know, Sammy and KO coming out. You had Jey Uso. You had Cody Rhodes. Drew McIntyre still officially a babyface. Obviously, did I say Becky? Yes, I didn't. I want to mention her. Chad Gable's been getting a push lately. and you know, Kofi's always popular. So yeah, where did those rank? Is there a cluster of top people or one or two who were just clearly above the rest?
Yeah, as for decibel level, I would definitely say it was Cody. He was given the advantage that he came out first. The crowd, you know, when you come out first and you're a big star, people are really excited. So from a decibel level, I think it was Cody. But from an engagement level, Jey Uso's got something going with the hand rock thing.
Huh.
I mean,
yeah.
When you watch it from the I'm at the upper levels of the arena, and you just watch the crowd, and it's not just the side of the crowd he's facing. It's the whole place is rocking, and it's just fun to just sit back and watch that. I mean, when some guy finds something like that, it's so simple, but it works so effectively where people are going to want to come to the show so they can do that, and that's so effective. And so from an engagement perspective, I think Jey Uso was the one they were most excited to participate with, I think would be the way to put it. And Becky got a good reaction. It would be interesting to see what Seth's reaction was compared to Jey. He really didn't get the traditional entrance, so I don't think you can really judge it on that level. But I think that was the top cluster.
Talk about anything you saw before or after Raw, or anything notable off-air during commercials?
The only dark match that I saw, I guess it was a main event match, was Tegan Nox versus Xia Li. And it was a traditional work-the-leg-over heat match, babyface comeback. Nothing too special. After the show, Cody came out, or Cody was already out because he did a run-in. But he got on the mic, thanked the fans for coming, talked about the building has a curfew, which I believe is actually true. And then that's when we left, so we didn't get like a dark main event. One thing that was really interesting to me, and it's different from when I used to watch or go to Jazz games and Grizzly hockey games as a kid, and I don't know if this is the case anymore, but I just remember when I'd go to events when I was a kid, you would get ready for the fourth quarter and people would just be leaving in droves. And then right when the game was over, you would just see like people run up the exit. And with wrestling events, I've seen that in the past too. It was kind of bizarre to me because I'm, you know, as the old guy who wants to get to work tomorrow, I'm like, ooh, I got to leave. I don't want to sit in the parking lot, right? So maybe I'll just wait to see if there's a dark main event. And I'm looking around and no one's leaving. Like, everyone is just sitting there. And when you're used to, like, people running to the exits when the show is over, and then you're at a WWE event with a whole bunch of little kids and everyone's just sitting in their seats calmly waiting for them to say, oh, it's time to go home. I thought that was kind of bizarre. Mm-hmm. Like they wanted more. Kind of feeling is what I had. Not that they didn't get enough, but they weren't aching to leave after being there for 3.5 hours.
Wow. I know originally the main event match was supposed to be Natalya against Xia Li, and Tegan Nox was going to answer the open challenge, and they flipped that around. Don't know why. I think Fightful reported that first. I heard that too. I didn't report it first. Fightful reported it first. But you got a different dark match than scheduled. But it's interesting that Tegan wrestled and didn't seem hurt. So you know, when the match was switched, you'd think, oh, maybe Tegan wasn't ready to go, but she was. So they just, yeah, who knows what? Maybe they just came up with how about Natalya? She hasn't been on TV since her title match. You know, there's a story we can tell with her saying Becky jumped ahead in line, because it feels like Becky's promo was the same if Tegan had answered it. And instead, Natalya just kind of was a bit of an audible. So that's interesting. But, yeah, so maybe you said this, and I just forgot while you were talking. Did they say, like, everyone, it's time to go home, thanks for coming? Like, was that when people finally started to realize, oh, it is over, we don't sit around waiting for something more?
Yes, like, not in those exact words, but pretty much. That's exactly what Cody said, is we have a curfew, we have to leave, They're telling me I need to wrap up now, so please go home.
Okay.
So please go home. And then he said that he told everyone to drive safe, legitimately. He told everyone to drive safe and be nice to each other. Always good advice for people leaving an event, by the way. But, yes, so it was like, okay, you can go home now. Like, it's time. Leave now.
It'd be nice advice for this country's politics for people to start being nice, but
yeah,
nicer.
Exactly.
But, yeah. Whole other issue. Cool. Brent, anything else you want to jump in with a question for Derek?
No, that was great.
Yeah. Derek, anything else you want to add from tonight's show? Not, it's not like every question that we are, all our questions prompted all your thoughts. So anything else you want to say before we sign off?
No, I'll just say this, Wade. Well, no, and then I say something, of course. But, Wade, I listen to a lot of your post shows. I usually don't call in because I go to bed early because, you know, like I'm old and I got to wake up early and teach kids. But I enjoy your content. I think out of all the wrestling journalists, pundits, whatever you want to call them, the content that I listen to, I find yours to be the most even-handed where I don't feel like it's catering to someone who provides someone with backstage information. So as unbiased as you can be in a world that's going to be full of bias, I think you do a really good job in that respect. So I enjoy your content for that reason, as well as the entertainment value. So great job.
Well, thank you. By the way, what grade do you teach?
I teach high school. So 15-year-olds to 18-year-olds is what I got.
What subject?
U.S. history, government, and politics.
Oh, wow. Cool. I didn't know when I made the politics comment that I was talking to someone who talks about that every day with kids. I just spent a couple hours at my son's high school meeting all his teachers today. So I'm, I have a appreciation for what they all went through with 12 hours starting the school day and teaching the kids and then having to spend 2 hours talking to parents about what they're teaching their kids. And a lot of them seem pretty tired. I have a longtime friend who is a teacher there too, who had been on leave for a while and was back, and she was like, oh, this is such a long, exhausting day. It's been fun. But good work teaching kids about U.S. history and politics. We need that.
Hey, I probably have more fun than they do. So that's what keeps me going. As good as be.
I mean, the teacher retired, or the last one. The last teacher was actually just, like, super energized. She's like, sorry, I'm out of time. I could keep going. But other ones were enthusiastic. But, you know, a couple commented about, yeah, it's been a long day, and we got to come back tomorrow morning and do it again. So, thanks for what you do, too, Derek.
Oh, well, thank you. You guys have a great night.
Yep, you too.
You too.
All right, let's jump over to Azan from St. Louis. He says, watching that amazing match between Kofi and Ivar tonight and remembering how Xavier brought up Kofi winning the WWE Championship last week in front of 89,000 people, do you think it's time for Kofi to do more singles matches like a TV main event with Seth or a pay-per-view match with Gunther? Brendan, what do you think?
I mean, I don't think it's a bad idea. I could see Kofi being the way that we were talking about Tommaso Ciampa being an option for Gunther this fall. I think that Kofi is in a similar position. I mean, I could see him being a credible challenger if you build him up a bit and get him ready and have Woods in his corner. I mean, I don't mind that at all. I think the ship has probably sailed on Kofi being a serious main event player. I'm not sure that at this stage you could really heat him up to a point of being a world title challenger unless it were a really, you know, secondary match on a pay-per-view or something down the line. But as far as being a challenger for Gunther, I like that option.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not enjoying their promos. I mean, I guess I'm not the audience, but my God, they're obnoxious.
They have been for a while.
Yeah.
Honestly. I mean,
yeah.
It's unfortunate. It honestly, more than anything else, when I see Woods and Kofi and their, like, the backstage banter and stuff, it just makes me miss Big E.
I was just going to bring that up myself. You and I are on the same page. It doesn't work as well without Big E there.
No.
to play off of, because Xavier is just sort of insufferably annoying always. And then Kofi just sort of seems performatively annoying. Like, well, this is what I do. I clock in, I act annoying, I sell t-shirts, kids cheer me, and I go home to my family and act normal. But Big E was like so endearing and charming and like unexpectedly goofy without being grating. Big E is an important cog in that that group in their sense of comedy or whatever it is that they do, their banter working. Number two from Azan. Is it weird that Chad Gable cares more about Seth's health than Becky Lynch? While I understand they're in their own ecosystem, I find it strange that Becky doesn't care about her husband at all. I would say that is very unfair. Becky probably was able to talk to Seth off camera to make sure he was okay. The camera just didn't happen to catch it. I don't think we see everything that happens on camera. A lot happens off camera, probably wise checking on their husbands. Storyline-wise, I'm saying here, we have to account for that, right, Brandon?
Yeah, I didn't think that was a big deal. But what I did think was kind of a big deal was the fact that Chad Gable acknowledged it. So rarely do you see baby faces stick up for other baby faces or, care about other baby faces. So it was a nice change of pace to have Gable ask Pierce about Rollins. And it didn't come out of nowhere either. We assume Pierce was outside of the medical room, the doctor's room checking on Rollins, and Chad walked up to, interrupt his phone conversation. So you assume that Gable saw the room and thought, hey, Rollins is in there. How is he doing? It makes sense. It's just a logical thing that a person would do in that scenario.
Number three from Azan, while I enjoy seeing Raw wrestlers on NXT, Raw stars on NXT, tonight felt like AEW and ROH, where NXT belts are being defended on the main show and random NXT stars competed for NXT belts on Raw. If I hadn't watched NXT, I would have thought Kalisto was returning to Raw instead of Dragon Lee. It worked last week. Becky drew a million plus viewers it wasn't just Becky, but it was mostly Becky. I mean, there was a big ratings pop for NXT, biggest rating or viewership they've done in years and years. And the main event run more than a million is just, for NXT, that's amazing. WWE feels they're onto something. They feel that they can cross promote. I think one of the when we critique AEW and we talk about their viewership being down year over year, I think part of it is NXT Raw has made NXT a show that some people are choosing to watch with their allotted wrestling hours. And I'm not saying it's a main factor. I think AEW is primarily responsible for their own, drop in viewership. And, there's the whole thing of people cutting the cord and stuff like that. But that has hurt AEW more than it's hurt NXT or Raw, for sure. So, it's all about relativity. But I do think NXT has just become, the show's all over the place. Todd Martin's review every week on The Fix is just walks through. It's like, well, this was good and this was nonsense. And this is, if there's more of this, that'd be great. And if there's a lot less of this, the show would be better. And it doesn't know what tone it's trying to be. So, it's not like it's this great wrestling show. But the good stuff is catching on. And the guest stars are appearing in the NXT ecosystem in a way that viewers care enough to tune in and watch when they do appear. Now the ratings drop down, the viewership drops down when the stars aren't there. But it's still, staving off a decline, which AEW is not, despite cord cutting. So it's a success story. I think the difference with AEW and ROH versus WWE main roster and NXT is NXT's on Tuesday nights on the same network as Raw, being seen by, 6-7, last week 800,000 plus people. And ROH is being seen by four figures, maybe five on a good week. It's not even close. Plus, WWE has a good number of titles, but they don't have NXT six-man titles and AEW Trios titles and an FTW title and a New Japan Strong title. They didn't have the foray of Kenny carrying around the Impact World title. They don't have two secondary titles on the same show for the men, and they don't have, the two women's championships and the ten. It's just there's – AEW just has so many belts, so the ROH thing seems even more egregious. Whereas Dominik carrying around the North American title and now Becky carrying it around. I mean, it crossed my mind. The ROH thing crossed my mind, but I immediately just thought, this is different enough. I don't mind it, but they got to be careful, because it can risk diminishing the value of the women's titles and the Intercontinental U.S. title if the NXT singles titles are getting this type of attention. So at least they got rid of the women's NXT titles and merged them. So, yeah, Brandon, your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I don't want to be too hypercritical of it because I do think that you're right. It is different. It's a different case, and it hasn't overtaken the product or subtracted from the product in a significant way yet. But the red flags were absolutely going up when I saw not just Becky with the NXT women's title, but then also Dragon Lee being featured next week on Raw for the North American Championship, because it's such a pressure point for me in AEW, and it's one of the biggest detractions that takes away from my enjoyment of that product. I don't want to see that kind of thing slip into WWE. And so it's a wait-and-see type situation, because I can't be too hypercritical of it, because it is different enough. Like you mentioned, there is nowhere near the amount of extra titles being paraded around on Raw or on SmackDown that there are on AEW TV. But where I am so hypercritical of it on AEW, which I think is very much deserved, I can't just completely ignore them doing something in a way similar on Raw.
Okay, let's go back to the conversation, and this is covering Raw a little bit, but and focus on Cody, but the Cody or Rock at WrestleMania, because I want to remember to do this, which is we ran a poll and said who should face Roman Reigns at WrestleMania 40, Cody, The Rock, Jey Uso, or someone else, and Cody's ahead right now, 47% to 38% with our online poll, Jey Uso coming in a distant third at 8%, someone else at 7%, some write-ins for LA Knight and Gunther. I think those are the two main people who would be considered someone else. I wrote a Keller Steak editorial on pwtorch.com. People can go to the opinion section at the website, opinion analysis, and click on that and look for the Keller Steak on it, where I laid out the scenario where I made the recommendation that WWE not steer away from the story they're telling with Cody to accommodate The Rock. I don't, because, you know, part of it is everything is baked in revenue wise. You know, they're going to, yes, the more, if you shatter records on Peacock, it can get you a better deal. It's a breaking point, but Cody is somebody who is in his prime and he can give you years more of being a top guy. And there's also the chance that Rock that Roman is prematurely cheered against Rock. If people see Rock as an interloper, yes, he's a big star, but there's a chance fans go, Reigns is our guy. He's not here all the time, but he's here more often. But Rock, you stole the spot from Cody, and it could backfire on Rock. We get kind of a Daniel Bryan Batista type dynamic. So I covered that and more in my editorial. There were quite a few people responding to that in terms of different scenarios that they want, including CM Punk's name being thrown in there. And you had brought up, Brandon, like, oh, who does Cody face if not Roman? What about a heel CM Punk? Would that feel like enough of a big name, OMG, the guy who left AEW first and the guy who left second? There's so many things we can talk about in terms of that side.
Are they gonna feud over who's got more beef with Tony Khan?
Right, yeah. Well, I mean, I think Cody and Tony are in good terms. I'm not sure about Punk and Tony anymore. So I mean, what do you think of that poll response, and where are you on the pros and cons of that? Because, there are people in the comment area just like, come on, Rock is such a big star. Like Bobby Stevens said, on no planet would Cody and Roman be a bigger attraction to potential new customers, non-wrestling fans, than Rock and Roman. Give the belt to Cody at SummerSlam after Roman beats Rock at Mania. It'll make Cody seem even bigger to beat the guy who beat The Rock. Of course, you got to get Rock to agree to lose, right? And that might have been one of the sticking points last year when Rock alluded to we couldn't get on the same page. And I've heard like hints that that might have been something was going on, that, you know, Rock was worried about how Rock would look and wasn't necessarily immersed in the Bloodline storyline and was more dismissive of that than he should have been. And it might have led to some hard feelings. So I don't know that it's just a guarantee that everybody, Paul Levesque especially, want to steer away from making Cody into the next big thing and completing that story for a one-off pop of you know, social media and Peacock viewership. So I'm kind of loading that question up, Brandon, in quite a bit there, but feel free to make your case and what you think.
Well, there's a lot of consideration here that has to be taken. I think that you have to weigh the fact that the Rock is the biggest trigger they can pull. There's nothing bigger. There's no name out there. There's nothing that you could do that's a bigger trigger for a general audience to create general mainstream interest and interest beyond even pro wrestling, beyond people that would be interested in a big-time WrestleMania main event. There's nothing you can do that is bigger than The Rock, just period, flat out. So that has to weigh very heavily. But what also has to weigh very heavily is the money you've spent, the time you've spent, and the effort you've spent over the last 2+ years getting Cody Rhodes into this position. And then it becomes a matter of, are you projecting that you stand to make enough money in one way or another off of The Rock's appearance in this main event that it becomes worth it to just say, screw it, we're gonna do it? I don't think there's anything that you give up the Cody rematch for other than The Rock.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I don't know that you even that you do it for The Rock, but it's the only one that you put into consideration, and you put it into consideration because of the money on the table, the money that you think you can draw by having that match on the books. But they have to acknowledge, no pun intended, that it's going to put a damper on everything that they've done to date with Cody, and you have to hope that he can recover from it in a way that still is satisfying. And at that point, what do you do? Where does he finish the story? When does he finish the story?
Punk coming out at number 30 and eliminating Cody in a after a low blow or, you know, something, and just like, whether he had been around or not at that point, there's all kinds of ways you can do it. But like, he eliminates Cody, takes away Cody's dream. You've got your storyline reason for Cody against Punk, and then Cody gets his match at SummerSlam instead. SummerSlam, WWE has built up to be bigger than WrestleMania was not that long ago. You know, I mean, 15 years ago, SummerSlam feels bigger than WrestleMania did, you know, 15 years ago. So, you know, that's an option. Kennedy C says, no, Cody should go on to beat Reigns for the title. I love Rock, but he's not going to be around. Cody needs to finish the story. And that's the thing. Do you miss your chance? Did they miss it last year? A lot of people thought so. Right. Do you risk skipping it this year when Cody's still mega popular, and then you get Cody on TV the next day, and you get to ride the ratings of Cody being the guy who finished his story, and fans aren't mad, as opposed to Rock showing up, doing his thing, and then Reigns shows up with the belt the next day, and you try to convince fans, well, now we're going to tell the Cody story. I mean, there is risk there.
Yeah, it's tough. And it also, I think it brings into question the point that you raised earlier. Is there resentment? Is there resentment against The Rock? Is there resentment not at Cody Rhodes specifically, but is there a time in which the interest wears thin? Because right now people are all in with Cody, and they're all in on his journey to get back to Roman Reigns. But if they continue to put that off, and the crowd is expecting it, even if they're being delivered a huge marquee dream matchup in its place, do they start to lose interest? Do they start to look elsewhere? I think that's a risk that you're going to take. And if the consolation prize is CM Punk, Punk's going to have his fans. There is no question about it. You are not going to, even at least for my money, I don't think that even with a crowd that is so in tune with what WWE presents and what WWE wants the crowd to do right now, with all the goodwill that they've earned. I think CM Punk is too big of a star with too much of a following to get a crowd to universally boo him against Cody Rhodes.
Other suggestions out there, Rock special referee for Rock Cody, or Rock, because he's not a full-time guy, he's in his 50s, Rock and Jay against Roman and Jimmy. And maybe that's why Jimmy, in a totally nonsensical sharp turn, went from, Jay, I don't want you to be like Roman, to, Roman, can I be your underling again? You sent me to the hospital, but man, I really didn't want to be part of the bloodline. Again, Todd Martin on the fix, and we put up the snippet on pwtorch.com for people who want to listen. Tore into the lack of logic on that.
Yeah.
It's a real stretch to come up with it. I mean, I did my best as an exercise, mental exercise, which is also in that snippet, to kind of explain Jimmy's actions. But it's not a flattering portrayal of Jimmy's constitution as a character. So maybe that's why they did that. Maybe Nick Gunn and Rock and Heyman and Roman and Levesque and they're like, we got this idea. And you could do that at the Royal Rumble, or, you know, to help sell tickets at Tropicana Field or
mm-hmm.
And that could then lead to another match or not. Maybe that's how they use Rock, and then you get everything you get a ton out of Rock wrestling, but you don't mess with Cody and Reigns. So there are other options out there, a little less conventional, a little less, you know, just straightforward connect the dots. But what do you think about some variations like that?
Yeah, I think you can do that, and then you run the risk. I mean, the Royal Rumble, it's going to make the Rumble feel like a big deal. But if The Rock isn't in a one-on-one match, then I think it doesn't make his appearance feel so overwhelming that it makes the Rumble feel bigger than WrestleMania. So I think that works. The other thing that sort of came to mind, and I don't think that I like it because it's hard to set up, but you do have two nights of WrestleMania. So you
that
could
was
always,
another option, yep.
You can always do both.
You could do both singles, or you could do a
tag
match,
and then Cody Roman.
Yep. And then you get everything. Right. You don't have to worry about the title change on the first night or a title. You don't have to worry about, like, Cody can beat Reigns on night one, and you can headline with Rock and Jay against Roman and Jimmy night two, or you flip it, and that works, and then that factors into, you know, Cody. I mean, what you don't want is a heel champion losing because he had to wrestle two nights in a row and you didn't as a babyface challenger. So there'd be other things
right.
to factor
Cody's
in.
Cody's got to face somebody else, yeah.
Or Cody has to wrestle Roman on night one.
Sure.
And then it's just, you know, who cares if Roman's a little beat up from the match. It's just a tag match. And then that could explain Rock getting the win over Roman, or Rock, at least Roman's team, because Roman was 100%, although Rock ultimately pins Jimmy. And then you get past, you know, the issue of if Rock's like, oh, if, you know, you can imagine him. If The Rock's going to return, The Rock needs to be standing tall as fireworks blast at the end of WrestleMania. I mean, you could kind of imagine him saying that.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, not even in a big ego way, just sort of like, come on, I'm The Rock. Let's be real. Nobody wants to leave a stadium at WrestleMania with me on my back for a count of three. And he might believe that in a disinterested, non-egotistical way, just trying to make, you know, just say the obvious, what fans would want to see on that night. So, yeah, there's a lot of pieces they can play with and a lot of options that might work. And Solis goes, you know, can be in that mix too and place somebody else like Jimmy or something too. So,
Did you make anything of, and this is not fully on topic, but Punk was mentioned as a name for Cody. Did you make anything about the comment, his commentary gig over the weekend?
That I've got nothing to do for 2 months?
Yeah.
Yes and no. It seems like it's something that somebody would say if they want to be talked about.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it confirms anything. And my thinking is that if he were going to show up, he wouldn't say that. He would lay low. He'd want it to be a surprise.
Yeah.
Like if you're planning someone's surprise party and you're like the big surprise, like I haven't seen this person in years, my old college roommate or something. Like, you're not going to message them and go, oh, you know, your birthday's in 2 months. Something special's going to happen. Like, you wouldn't do that. You'd want it to be a surprise. And with Punk, I'm suspicious he just put that out there just to kind of mess with the media. you know, mess with social media fans and stuff. But I don't rule out Occam's razor, which is, yeah, he just spilled the beans a little bit either. I don't know, and I'm not, you know, and I don't know either way. And I will say in checking around, I haven't heard anyone say, yeah, they think Punk's coming in. But people who would be able to rule it out also haven't ruled it out, but it's, you know, early in the process, I think.
It's just there's a lot of and again, it's always that situation where it could be absolutely nothing, but it was especially curious to me the way that he spoke about WWE in that speech, and in particular Paul Levesque. That to me was even more telling than the comment. Just it was almost as though he went out of his way to say nice things. And that is not his MO.
Although he knows Tony Khan and, you know, and Paul Levesque are, you know, they're the true promoting rivals right now. Vince is just sort of, you know, in this other world. So if you want to stick it to TK, start saying nice things to the guy who counter-programs Tony and triggers Tony. Tony doesn't show emotion and doesn't get triggered real easily on camera. And the Triple H stuff gets to him, you know, when Levesque is counterbooking and he thinks he's using, you know, dirty tactics or whatever, that does get to Tony. So you can imagine Punk going, I'm going to cost Tony some sleep. So I'm playing devil's advocate a little bit, but I don't think I'm doing so in some, you know, like it's not a big stretch to imagine that he's just doing that. Cause yeah, he's anti-TK right now. Interesting. Anything else on the Rock Cody aspect?
I don't think so. I mean, I assume that this will be the Rock's only appearance unless or until he starts WrestleMania build. I mean,
he gave no hint. He didn't allude to anything. That was totally an isolated special appearance type thing.
And this felt very much, and I don't know if that was the case, but it felt very organic, as in it came together very naturally. The Rock was going to the Colorado game. WWE happened to be in town. It just sort of made sense.
Yep. That's a thing.
So, yeah, yep. I don't get the sense that we're going to see him again unless there is a reason for it. And I mean, if he's looking around and seeing how WWE has used John Cena on this run so far, I'd be staying far away until they need me for WrestleMania season.
Anything else from Raw that you want to bring up that maybe we haven't covered yet?
No, I would just say that they've done, I think they did a solid job tonight, not counter programming, but standing up to SmackDown, which felt like a very big show. You had The Rock, you had Pat McAfee, you had John Cena, and this was a lot more tame and a lot more laid back, and it was just the guys and gals that are there every week, but they did a good enough job to make it feel like a worthwhile show to tune into and not like a complete afterthought in the wake of a really big SmackDown.
We didn't spend as much time, I think we should. Maybe close out on this. We'll see. Jey Uso and the way they told that story with Kevin Owens going, I don't trust you if you're in Judgment Day or not. I don't trust you. Then Sammy making the case, we didn't trust each other, KO, but now we do, you know? And Cody, you know, being put in a position to explain himself. And then Jey, you know, and then Priest going, don't make me look bad. I'm pitching for you. The other guys are pitching for Jimmy. By the way, that's not a good way to get someone to join your faction, saying I'm the only one voting for you and the others want your twin brother more, which is sort of the implied in that. But Priest going, you know, decide tonight. Do you think they should have made it seemingly pretty clear this early, or was it important to make it this clear this early because Jey has hedged so much and been back and forth so much? And if the story is ultimately Drew McIntyre going heel, you want Drew going heel against someone who hasn't hedged on whether he's done aligning with people like the Bloodline, like the Bloodline in the form of Judgment Day. So I'm kind of talking myself into, it was good to make this move now because you want fans to boo Drew, and they're going to boo him more if they are completely sympathetic to Jimmy, because Jimmy doesn't seem like Jay. So Jay doesn't seem like he's hedging or being wishy-washy about what he stands for anymore.
Yeah, I'm firmly in the camp of the latter in that it was a very good move to make it definitive tonight, and I hope that they stick to that and they don't waver in the coming weeks. I think that, like you said, Jay has been wishy-washy throughout the last several months, be it with the Bloodline, be it with the Judgment Day. It was very important for him to just firmly take a stand in the babyface role and settle into it, especially when you have Drew McIntyre coming down the pipeline with an impending heel turn. I don't think you want the questions arising about the will he or won't he with Jey Uso. We've seen so much of that with both he and Jimmy that I think it's a good thing to just have Jay straight up with a straight answer, and they can tell the story now of Jay trying to earn the trust and the respect and the, you know, sort of make good on his apology to guys like Kevin Owens and to Sami Zayn. And I'm glad you brought up the point about KO and Sami too, because I wanted to mention, you know, we talked at the beginning of the show about how much I liked the fact that there was this common thread running throughout the night that made things move along and felt it made it feel like the 3 hours were well paced. I have really, really liked and appreciated the fact that so many characters in the Jey Uso orbit right now are acting logically. Because like you mentioned about Todd Martin bringing up the Jimmy Uso story on SmackDown, that makes absolutely no sense. And it's very, very hard to kind of do the mental gymnastics to get to a place where it does work logically. So conversely, over on Raw, everyone in Jay's orbit makes a lot of sense right now. Sami Zayn is sympathetic toward Jay because he had this really great relationship with him, and he sees the good in people, and especially Jay, and he wants this thing to work. Kevin Owens is completely suspect of Jay because he's seen what Jay has done to him, to Cody, to Sammy. He doesn't trust him. It makes perfect sense for him to be in this scenario. And the crowd is not getting on Kevin Owens in a negative way because they know it makes sense. They understand. They're with Kevin. They see exactly why he is so hesitant. For Cody, like you mentioned at the beginning, Cody is the ultimate babyface. He sees the good in people. He wants to please the fans. He knows the fans love Jey Uso, and so he's trying to do right by them. And then on the heel side, you have Judgment Day. And they're acting nefariously to try to recruit numbers for their faction because they know that the stronger they are and the more people are in their orbit in a positive way, the more dominant they're going to be. All of it makes sense. Even Drew McIntyre, who has been a babyface for a long time, but has been slowly transitioning to this heel role. And a lot of it has to do with the way that he perceives the company has dealt with him since coming out of the pandemic. The fact that he was the COVID champion, he carried the company through that time, and then since that time, he's kind of fallen by the wayside. So now he sees Jey Uso come over to Raw, and not only is that a problem for him because he doesn't like the way that Jey Uso has treated people that McIntyre has been friendly with, and because he's had his own struggles with the Bloodline himself, but he also doesn't like the fact that this is another guy who's very popular with the crowd coming in and potentially usurping his spot. So everyone is acting in a way that is logical and sound and sensical, and we almost never get that. So it's great.
As Derek said, I mean, the last year of WWE has been better. I mean, the booking of WWE, and it merits investigating. I mean, I know there's been some setbacks in certain aspects when Vince has been exerting his influence, but I mean, it really is. I mean, when we put up our 5 and 10 years ago best of shows, and when I put up, heck, 20 years ago, Flashback, we run our Sean Radican 20 years ago is covering SmackDown for PWTorch.com, and we've been publishing those on a regular basis on the website. And when you look over them, it's like, I mean, I'm not saying WWE's perfect and beyond, you know, criticism in certain areas, but they kind of have figured out what they are and how to do it pretty darn smoothly. And yes, I mean, the Jimmy, you know, you can, you know, rant about Jimmy Uso, very effectively, incredibly at this point in terms of how his character's been booked. I mean, so I'm not in any way saying we don't have things that we can critique or scratch our head and go, what are they thinking there and all that. But there are a lot of things that they're doing well, and part of it is it does seem like it's being booked in a way right now where it's not a circle of writers going, hey, we've never done this before, or hey, let's cater to internet fans in a way that breaks a fourth wall, or hey, this will get a social media buzz and a pop, or this will pop the crowd in a short-term way that doesn't really serve the larger purpose. They've eliminated there's an absence of irritants. I used that word, you know, a year ago after Vince first left and Triple H took over, and it was like, he's not going to overhaul things, but there's going to be they're going to gain through subtraction of some irritating things. But I think they've really found a rhythm and a groove in terms of formatting. I think Michael Cole is doing the best work of his career, and I think he's doing the best announcing that we've heard of any product in a long time. And again, people who don't watch or listen to Raw very much or SmackDown, like, they just are like, really? Are you serious? But if you listen now to his big match calls and his TV calls, it's really good. And he knows when to emphasize points and when to pull back. So, and he's there, you know, I just think, you know, the prep work compared to like Kevin Kelly on Collision, where he's just been, you know, disappointing, I'll put it mildly. You know, you can just tell Cole is takes his job seriously, and he's putting a ton of homework in, knows every character, knows what beats they want to hit, knows what points need to be made, knows what to say going in and out of commercials, knows what to underline. And that's just not happening with Kevin Kelly, you know, the much, you know, heralded Kevin Kelly from New Japan. That's not happening on Collision right now. And so I think Cole just stands out even more so because of that. So it's just all the pieces, you know, are in place. And then you have good crowds that are enthusiastic and cheering the people who are supposed to cheer and boo the people that WWE wants you to boo. A lot of things are going well right now. And then you look at, you know, big attendance and big gates and setting records on social media and on streaming. A lot of this is because they've earned it. They're doing a lot of things well.
Do you think that it is entirely coincidental or that there is reason to make connections between the uptick in the week-to-week general quality and the long string now of more sensical booking that WWE has put together going hand-in-hand with the rise of AEW, having an actual secondary promotion?
Yep. I think that contributed to it. I think they were like, wait a second, this is our industry. And we need to end some bad habits, some self-indulgent things, and start figuring out what this fan base wants and also learning from what AEW isn't doing well and show them up by doing things we're capable of doing well at a high level that they just didn't have the incentive to do, you know, 5 or 8 years ago.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me that when AEW started, WWE was a product that a lot of people were disenchanted with. And over the course of the last year or so, I mean, there's always, you know, the diehard supporters of both companies. But I think for a lot of people who avidly watch both and enjoy a lot of aspects of both, I know for me, it's sort of crossed back. Generally speaking, I find the weekly product that WWE puts together more enjoyable than I do AEW. And it's got nothing to do with the wrestling quality itself. I mean, AEW more often than not always does that very, very well. But there is just a number of baffling bookings going on over there. And that was stuff that I would regularly say about WWE for a long time.
100%. And now the question is, can AEW have a 1 minute break between rounds and come back rejuvenated? Like, does Tony Khan have a second act? Is he capable of a comeback? Not totally reinventing himself, but realizing he's got to step up and he can't just coast with the big signings and the big EVPs and the shock value of starting a new company at a scale that he did with a big cable clearance. And, you know, does he have it in him? Does the roster have it in them? Can Kenny and Hangman and the Bucks step up with Jericho and Danielson aging out? And I mean, yeah, just there's a lot, you know, losing Punk. I mean, yeah,
those domestic numbers are, to me, is the most concerning thing. I mean,
attendance.
I mean, just insane, really. They could go from, having one of the biggest, most successful and well-earned events in pro wrestling history with All In to, largely Dynamite and Collision being held to under 3,000 people a week. It's just, it's almost unfathomable, and you could understand it a little bit more if WWE were also struggling attendance-wise at the same time. Then it would make a whole lot more sense. But they're just not. And not only are they not struggling, they're in a significant boom.
Yes, exactly. SmackDown rebounded thanks to The Rock with more than 2.5 million on Friday. Maybe that number's lower than you would think, but they were under 2.1 million, I think, three of the last 5 weeks, so they got a good boost there. Meanwhile, Rampage didn't get any bump from SmackDown going up. There's not like, oh, when SmackDown does well, Rampage does well. They dropped to 335,000, which was the lowest that they had done since July 28th when they did 324,000. I think that's correct. I don't think they had been lower than that since then. When they get moved around time slot wise, they have had lower numbers, but that's, we're kind of waiting for, is Collision going to hurt Dynamite and Rampage by just watering down, when people pick and choose their spots. And now that you can see, randomly see everybody who's on Dynamite also on Saturday nights, Collision could bring Dynamite down and also make Rampage, even less, of a viewership attraction on a weekly basis, in addition to attendance going down. And man, if you're AEW, if you're Tony Khan, you wish you signed a TV extension a little bit earlier than with these metrics looking the way they're looking right now.
Well, the news of the potential expansion to 12 pay-per-views a year going on Max, I think, is an interesting development. I mean, certainly from a fan cost perspective, it's a huge positive.
It might be, it might be the shakeup in booking that Tony Khan needs. Honestly, might need that focus of, now we're not going to save main events, because that's one of the criticisms of TK is, oh, we can't have that guy against that guy. And I don't know that it's just Tony. I think he has a splintered locker room. I know there's people. And it's a case in WWE. I know there's some people Roman Reigns doesn't want to wrestle. There are people Hulk Hogan didn't want to wrestle one-on-one. People who are in a position of power get to overrule who they want to wrestle and not wrestle. But there are top people in AEW who are in, it wasn't just Cody who had his kind of circle of people. It's not just the elite. There's a lot of little pockets. And Tony Khan is letting wrestlers basically, do what Daniel Bryan doesn't hide, which is, I just want to pick opponents I want to wrestle. But everybody's doing that. In AEW. So many people are. And so if you have monthly pay-per-views, that can be the disruptor to the process and the routine that lets main event guys with power who are making big money know, we now need you to not be selective, because we got to have we need you in a pay-per-view match every month. And every 2 to 3 months, we're going to cycle you from that opponent to somebody else, and it has to be big. You can't just have 4 pay-per-view matches a year now, or 5 or 6 if you count, the specialty pay-per-views. We need all hands on deck, and the pace of the booking becomes crisper, because they are absolutely now having to every 4 weeks in rhythm deliver big lineup. So that's the optimistic view, is maybe that will be the change that's kind of shakes them out of the booking rut that they're in and gets Tony Khan back to booking and not just matchmaking dream matches.
And I think, the move to Max should be seen as a pretty big win for them overall. If that happens, it's a big deal, because not only are you significantly lowering the point of entry for people who are on the fence or are fans but can't spend that much money on pay-per-views now. WWE hasn't done it for close to 10 years. And so the expectation...
You can watch TV every week now, Brandon, in WWE, and not have to break your bank to see the conclusion to the... Like, I don't want to watch a TV series on Netflix and then have to pay $50 to see the season finale.
Exactly, yeah. And the cost of the barrier there is high, and it used to be that way for WWE and for wrestling in general. So I understand why it's the model, but yep, they have to realize that by adding more pay-per-views, you're going to spread your audience thinner. 5 was one thing, but you've since added All In, you've added now Wrestle Dream. and they've added Forbidden Door. So you've got three extra shows that you're asking people to purchase at $50. And not only that, three of them occur within, what, a little over a month's time?
Yep.
So that's $150 in the month of September and the very first day of October. That's a lot to ask of people. And yes, I know that there are people who are pirating it and people who are paying less via VPN. But still, that's not enough to make up for the audience that you could potentially pull in by having a streaming service that's carrying your product, not to mention the fact that if you are presenting live pay-per-view on Max, I mean, that is one of the largest streaming services there is. It's instantly a bigger deal than Peacock, and they can tout that. Max is a prestige streaming service. So unlike Peacock, which struggles to keep an audience, and honestly, WWE is probably one of the large reasons that Peacock has remained relevant. Max is not that way. Max is prestige, and if you say you're on Max, it's going to feel like a bigger deal.
Yes, and two things on that. One, people say, and I think Tony Khan would agree, what AEW does best are pay-per-views.
Yes.
That's what Tony's most proud of, and it's what they do best, and so a lot more people would be able to see them. Mm-hmm. So you have that. And then you just have people are tuning into Max to watch whatever is on HBO or whatever big movie gets released on Max. There's going to be an image of Jon Moxley and MJF. Yeah. And Jay White, like you're turning your wrestlers into essentially like Marvel Universe characters in the ecosystem, the streaming ecosystem that they appear on, and you get a rub. There's a synergy there that comes from that. So yeah, I mean, if you're sitting here going, oh, AEW's in really big trouble. Well, I mean, I wouldn't say they're in big trouble, but it is a down period, and I think they're in trouble if they don't accept that that things need to be improved upon. But there's potentially change on the horizon that could be good. That could help them in a number of ways. Yeah.
I did notice this week when I was just taking a look at a few events, and they were, I know that they've since dropped prices, but they were charging WWE pay-per-view prices for Grand Slam, which is, I mean, unfathomable.
Yeah.
I don't know what the call was there. I mean, to give you an example, I attended Blood and Guts in July at TD Garden, and I sat second row on the hard cam side, so not on TV, on the, you know, back. I was literally right next to Justin Roberts all night. And my ticket before service fees was $90, which for a large-scale TV taping in the second row on the floor, I think that's a great value. And that seems to be about what AEW seems like they could get away with charging. But I was looking at the Grand Slam event and seeing tickets in the lower bowl across from the ring at $220 face value.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a WWE pay-per-view price. I mean, that is what they charge for the lower bowl for their PLEs.
Yep, and you're getting a lot of two-for-one offers, and I mean, the Kevin Kelly spent the entire Anthony Bowens match on Collision practically begging people to go to drive to New York. Like, if you're in the tri-state area, if you're anywhere in the United States or Canada, drive. If you can't drive, then you can watch on for free on TV. But you should drive there, and tickets are available. I mean, it's, you want to do that. You want to let people know, hey, if you want to be there, it's a cool venue. If you're trying to sell Grand Slam tickets, there's so many, I was going to say swings and misses, but they're not even swinging. They're just missing. If you want to sell tickets to Grand Slam, show footage of when you've been in that venue before and how special it looks and how cool it is. Like, there's just so many things that from a production vision standpoint, AEW is so weak on. It's just Tony Khan has strengths. He has weaknesses. And one of his weaknesses is he's not a visual person. You know, he doesn't imagine, how do I make my wrestler seem like big stars? How do I make going to a Dynamite feel like a big deal? All he's got to do is watch an NBA game or an NFL game. You see athletes coming in with their headphones on and dressed up in their street clothes, walking in the back area. you show wrestlers arriving. NXT does it in the darn parking lot of the Performance Center. This is not brain surgery. You show fans arriving to the venue. You interview them, and you get the – I mean, AEW's rabid fans wearing their
t-shirts. Your dog agrees.
I know, yeah. He's like, you've been doing this long enough. Now give me attention. And so – now the cats are getting into it with them. They're telling him to quiet down on podcasting. You know, there's so many things as visually he could do that, one, would just make the product look more major league, but it would also – you know, do I want to drive to New York when I can watch it on TV? Well, show people how cool that venue was. Remind them of that atmosphere. Mm-hmm. You know, ideally last year you would have interviewed people leaving the building before they got frustrated by traffic and said, what'd you think? And then bring that footage back. And I don't know if he doesn't have the staff or doesn't imagine doing it, or he thinks about it, just doesn't think it's worth it. He disagrees with me on that. But, I mean, he's on TBS and TNT, and they do such a better job with the NBA presentation, making those things feel like it's the place to be and it's the league that matters and these players are stars. And Tony just thinks everybody just knows that these are big stars because they all watched the Tokyo Dome 7 years ago. And it's like that expiration, that freshness date is expiring on how much he can ride out the, like you said, being an alternate to a bad WWE product and presenting dream matches to a niche audience. He's beyond that now. He should be. Anyway. Nothing there I'm saying is new, but that's the summary of a lot of my thoughts on them right now.
Yeah, I'm in firm agreement, and I'm looking at the Ticketmaster page for Grand Slam as we speak, and unless there is a very significant walk up willing to spend exorbitant amounts on tickets, it is going to be really tough to light that venue in a way that doesn't look empty.
I still think back.
It's not good. It's
yeah. And, you know, I think back when World Class Championship Wrestling ran like the Cotton Bowl, and like they would air segments of the Cotton Bowl special on their syndicated show for like three, four weeks, an hour at a time, which I loved. It was fantastic watching. Like, oh my God, this is like a big stadium show. But it was just scattered fans opposite the hard cam, mm-hmm. scattered fans on the floor, and poor Bill Mercer on play-by-play going, there's a traffic jam outside. Fans are still arriving. And you'd say that for like 4 weeks straight. So
it becomes – the thing is, I've never – no, like WWE, there's been periods of time for sure where attendance has been very poor. I mean, you look prior to the pandemic, there were poor ticket sales all around. I mean, for TV tapings especially, and it was not uncommon in the slightest to see entire balconies tarped off. And there are tricks. There are camera tricks that you can pull so that is not as noticeable. And there have been times where AEW has done a very, very good job at that. And, of course, there is the trick of you put the hard cam on sale first, and then you open up the back, you know, the back of the arena behind the announcers. And then only if you sell through your allotment do you open up the hard cam side. And for a while, I think AEW did a really good job of presenting their TV in a way that made things look just fine. Mm-hmm. But there have been a couple of moments in the last couple of months, and in particular I'm thinking of Dynamite in Cincinnati, where Jon Moxley had to be incredibly careful of what tunnel he came out of so as not to expose how few fans were on that side of the arena. And it was so bad that they could not avoid showing the empty end of the arena. There was no camera angle that they could cut to avoid showing you that the far end of the arena was completely empty. Yeah. And at that point, you just wonder, like, why not fill a smaller building like they used to do?
Yeah. But you get in a smaller building, and there's pros and there's cons. And the con of it is it looks like you're in an old building without that – the ribbon scoreboard in the first and second deck and the stage. It's like there's something about saying we're at the same building that this NHL or NBA team play in, and it's all
where that WWE is at.
Yeah. So anyway, we're not gonna solve it all tonight, but a nice sidebar there, Brandon. Thank you. Always a pleasure talking wrestling with you.
Yeah, of course. A lot of fun. We got a little AEW in there. I got to vent some of my frustration with that product. I really want to like it. I really, really do. I want two companies that I can enjoy in full.
Yes. All right, great. Brandon, we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good.
Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you next time.